Ronananian.
Just to charge and or replace a battery now requires a separate battery registration tool in order to do it.
Hang on, help is on its way. I'll be there as fast as I can.
The Car Doctor.
You're not leaving the key in the ignition, are you, by chance?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
In the garage.
All right, take the key out of the ignition and see if the problem goes away. You leave the key in the ignition, it may always be active and armed.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, did you ever wonder? I do all the time. Sometimes that's what makes me fix cars. Hello and welcome, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at the helm, here to talk to you about your automobile and its problem, whatever that might be. Down around the bottom of this hour, we're going to bring back Uncle Steve. Obviously, everybody knows Uncle Steve passed 2 years ago, and it's been such a Memorial Day tradition that we've taken the archives and put together a little memorial to Uncle Steve in the terms of his thoughts and his messages, and we're going to bring him back and put him right up here in the next half hour or so to talk to us again and remind us what Memorial Day is all about. And as he said, Memorial Day is a solemn observance of what this country has been through and what our veterans have been through as they've defended it. So it'll be good to hear from him again, from the great beyond, I guess, as you could say, as he's in blue skies. Let's get over and talk to Joel, Michigan, 2010 Toyota Camry, and some problems with the way this vehicle is slowing down, it looks like. Joel, what's going on here? Talk to me.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
It's got 130,000 miles on it. I bought it about a month ago. It's an automatic transmission. I've never had this happen like this other than in a manual car. When I coast up to an intersection, it feels as if the engine is braking the vehicle. Normally in the past with all my other cars, you just kind of coast up and you brake when you need to. This feels like I'm in a manual transmission car, and I'm wondering if I'm just imagining a problem that's not there or if I should be checking in with my mechanic on this issue.
Well, when you say it feels like the engine is causing it to drag, what's actually happening, Joel? Is the car stalling as it gets to the stop? Is it feel like the brakes are applied when they're not?
It's not stalling at all. The car runs just fine. I mean, 32 miles per gallon on the highway, no complaints at all. Other than
right.
It just feels like when I used to drive a manual transmission and I'd approach an intersection, if I didn't downshift quickly enough as I'm approaching the intersection, the engine would start to brake or slow the car down. It's that lugging feeling. And I'm feeling that same thing with this car. And I've never had that before with an automatic transmission. I'm wondering if I'm just...
Have you tried popping it into neutral?
I thought about doing that, but then I was warned by my dad a long time ago, never put an automatic transmission in neutral when it's in drive or when it's on the road there.
Well, for the purposes of our test, that'll understand. And I'm not saying when you're at 50, pop it in neutral and just use the brake to slow the vehicle down. You know, when you get down to that next 20 miles an hour, just 20 miles an hour before the stop, as you get the sensation of this, I'll use your term, lugging feeling. If you pop it into neutral, being careful not to go into reverse, because that's a problem, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that sensation go away? All right.
I haven't tried it. So
and what I'm thinking about is, just so you know, I have had some cases where there are issues with this particular generation Camry with the brakes locking up, giving that sensation, and it's an issue with the brake booster.
Okay.
All right. Do the brakes feel okay?
Yeah, no problems at all.
No problems. The power assist feels like it's got power assist, for lack of a better way to put it.
It seems very, normal to me. Like I said, I haven't had a Toyota before, so this is
right.
I'm normally a GM guy, but the brakes feel just fine to me.
Okay. Yeah, I would tell you try neutral. Consider that we possibly have a bad brake booster. And obviously, there the thing you want your mechanic to look at is, do you have a dragging brake? Do you have a normal brake issue, brake caliper, brake drum issue, something's hanging up, not allowing to be fully released, creating this sensation? But
I would say that once a week, maybe, when I back the car out at the beginning of the day and put it back into drive, right before I put it back into drive and I put on the brakes to stop the car,
right,
there are occasions where I hear a noise coming from the brake system.
Okay.
But it's the only time that it happened. So maybe what you're saying applies here. I don't know.
Yeah, it might. I mean, listen, you bought the car used, right?
Correct.
I have never encouraged, nor have I ever myself purchased a used vehicle without making the first stop, the lift, pull the wheels, look at the brakes, look at the front end, you know, do a complete inspection. Nothing against the place that sold it to you, nothing against the person that drove it, worked on it before you, but another set of eyes. You know, everybody looks at a sunset and everybody sees different things every day of our lives. And you want to make sure they're seeing the right things to keep you safe. So, it might be a trip to the mechanic.
Something for me to think about then.
Yeah, but try the neutral piece first before you go to your mechanic, because then you can explain to them, hey, it did or didn't make a difference. And it might save him a step and ultimately save you some money when he's doing his diagnosis. All right?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you. Chris, Long Island, 06 Volkswagen, doesn't start. And the problem is, no, I'm only kidding, Chris. What do you got here? Chris? Yo, Chris. Chris going once. Chris going twice. Hey, no Chris. Okay. I guess Chris's Volkswagen didn't start and the phone didn't work. So how the heck could that be? Hey, by the way, have you heard, while we're waiting for them to find Chris, we'll see what happens between now and the pause. I just want to mention, I've been looking for a spot to put this in, that the Toyota Highlanders, the new 2020 Highlander, has a recall. The automaker's recalling 38,000 Highlanders because they may stall while driving and cause a crash. And I'm kind of surprised because this is the new Highlander that everybody was raving about, the new body style, the new shape, the new look, the new fit. And evidently it's a problem. You can go look it up on the NHTSA website if you happen to own one of these. NHTSA campaign number is 20 V as in Victor 162. 20 Victor V as in Victor 162. Toyota's own number for this recall is 20 Tom Alpha 06. And just plug your VIN. It's a good idea to do this anyway. All right, we're all sitting at home anyway. We've got nothing else to do. Take your 17-digit VIN, go out to NHTSA.gov, NHTSA.gov. Plug in your 17-digit VIN, which you'll find on your vehicle registration or title, and it will tell you, does your vehicle have any open recalls, not just Toyota's, everything. So that's something that the federal government mandated about 2 years ago, that they wanted everybody to be aware of if vehicles had any recalls on them. As far as, you know, issues and so forth. So that's going on with the 2020 Toyota Highlanders, something to be aware of. And somebody passed me this note not too long ago, and I want to put it out on air. If you have purchased jack stands from Harbor Freight, wait to hear this story. There's a certain series of jack stands from Harbor Freight that are failing. What a great thing, right? Improperly welded, improper material. They've recalled a generation of these particular jack stands. They didn't have particular numbers. I read the article. There was nothing definitive as to how to determine that I saw. But I would encourage you that if you've purchased jack stands from Harbor Freight, call them up, find out what it is, or get out to their website. I'm sure harborfreight.com, whatever the website is, you'll find more information. But I couldn't imagine being under a vehicle and having a jack stand fail. That's got to be horrible. So we want to keep everybody safe. You want to check that, the Harbor Freight jack stand recall. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. 855-560-9900 is the phone number. Let's get over to Chris in Long Island. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Good, sir. How are you? Gee, you changed from a Volkswagen to a Camry. Did I scare you or did Tom get it wrong? I'm only kidding. So what's going on here?
I have the 06. It's got a 2.5 liter in it, and it's crank, no start.
Okay.
I replaced the fuel filter Believe it or not, the fuel pump, purge valve. I looked all this stuff up on like YouTube repair videos.
Right.
An idea. I never worked on a Volkswagen before. I'm a Chevy guy myself. I could rebuild a motor, but I can't figure out how to get this car started.
Okay, so this engine codes. Go ahead.
2400, and then I had initially I had a 3-2-1 ignition distributor circuit range performance open, but then I replaced the crank sensor and that went away. And I'm still having a 2400 still showing up even after I replaced the leak detection pump.
Okay, what is this? Because my call screen says 06 Toyota Camry. I think Tom's screwing around with me.
No, it's a Volkswagen Jetta.
Oh, that Tom, I love him to death. So it's a VW Jetta with a 2.5, and it doesn't start.
Yes.
Was it a case that you went out there one morning it started, and the next morning it didn't, or did you buy this car used this way?
Bought it used this way. I don't know its history as far as that, but it was running fine. And then one day I was coming up the driveway and
it died.
It just stopped.
Right.
Yeah. No. There's no fuel getting to the motor whatsoever.
Okay. So the fuel pump. Do you have fuel pressure if you turn the key on? Do you have fuel pressure? You know, in crank mode. Does it prime the rail?
Zero. Nothing.
Okay, so we've got it. We've got a fuel pump activation fault. Do we have spark? Do we have injector pulse?
We do have spark because I put the starter fluid in down through the throttle body chamber in there, and it started for as long as the fluid was in there, and then it would just stop.
Okay, so we have spark. We're not sure if we have injector pulse.
Yes.
You got a mechanic? You got a mechanic stethoscope?
That I don't have.
Do you have something you could just listen to? What I want you to do is I want you to listen to the injectors if you can get to them and just listen for a click. Have somebody crank it and listen for the click, click, click. Is the injector being fired? If the injector, and the chances are that it is, but it's a very definitive moment on any car. If you have a vehicle that has spark, no injector pulse versus spark and injector pulse and the fuel pump's not being energized, it's a different set of parameters. All right. So, you know, that's a simple enough thing to do if you're a car guy and you're going to be working on cars for a while. You know, it's a cheap fix. Just run down to your local auto parts store, buy a set of mechanics or a pair of mechanics stethoscope and you know, just listen for it. All right. If you go back to the fuel pump, you've got voltage there, yes or no?
Yes, I do.
You have voltage. You have power and ground to the fuel pump.
That is a certainty. I did put a voltmeter on it right at the pump itself.
Okay, do this. Disconnect the fuel pump connector. You got an old style round or square headlight floating around?
I could check. That's not a bad idea.
Right.
Possibly. Yep.
You know, see if you can. If you go to crank, does the headlight light up? A headlight will pull about 7 amps of current. It may not match what a fuel pump does, but at least it loads the circuit enough so that you'll know, hey, I've got power here, all right? If you can light a headlight, that fuel pump has to run, or you've got a bad pump. Did you put a pump in this?
Yes, it's brand new.
Okay, so you see the logic here? Something's missing. If you've got power and ground, if you've truly got power and ground, and that pump doesn't turn on, take the pump out of the car. Hook it up to a battery. Does the pump spin? Did I ever tell you the story about how new parts don't work?
Yes, I did hear that one. Yes, I did.
Okay. You know, let's start here. Before we go any further, before we get any deeper into this, all right? Because you're telling me that you turned the key to the crank position and you don't have any fuel pressure, correct?
I have zero.
Right. So why isn't the pump turning on? If you've got power and ground at the terminal for the pump, you're either on the wrong two wires, or you've got a bad new part, or the 2 inches between the pump and the top of the connector in the tank is somehow damaged, and it's not allowing the pump to run.
Okay. I do believe that it's not the pump, because I did take it back out and tested it. Just like you said, to check, I test the old one too. And believe it or not, it wasn't the old pump; wasn't bad either.
Okay,
it spun. So this new one, I figured I'd put the new one in because I already bought it.
Okay,
they won't return
I can
it with
listen.
Gas
I can
on.
Dig that. We've all been there. But think about the logic here. You're telling me you've got power and ground at the pump, and the pump still doesn't run. And when you cycle the key off, the voltage disappears at the pump, showing that the PCM is in control of applying voltage or not to the fuel pump circuit.
That it does, yes.
Okay. Then let's, you know, what's left? You got this.
What I did also is I replaced the relay fuse, the one that's under the hood. It says, well, like a 100's on the top of it. They're like a ceramic five prong.
Why?
Go ahead. I thought that was the relay for the fuel.
But wait a minute. Listen, and I say this with love, all right? You prove to yourself you've got power and ground at the pump. All right? And you're a smart guy.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're a smart
guy. That's probably why.
Right. You're a smart guy. You're no dummy. Look how far you've come, right? You proved that you got power and ground at the pump. You tested the pump. Either you don't have power and ground at the pump and you're testing something wrong, or there's a break in the wiring harness between the top of the pump module and the pump itself.
Pump module. Okay.
All right. When I say pump module, I mean the pump. The pump is in the tank, correct?
Yes.
Right. So that's the pump module, the piece that the pump attaches to. European cars tend to, you know, domestic cars. Chevys, how many fuel pump modules have you done, right, where you changed the whole thing, sender, pump, and all, right?
Zero.
Right.
Don't do that.
Yeah. They
never have a problem with them.
Right. If you have it, if you've ever done it, you just change the whole thing. You don't do it by component. European cars, you're going to change the individual pump, individual sender, although now I think they're going to a module style. But you get my point.
I have an idea.
Go find a headlight. Put a headlight to where the fuel pump connector is. You got to have power and ground. If that lights the headlight, make it stand out by itself. I don't care how you do it. Find a spot in the harness, cut the harness, make your two leads, although I'd prefer to use the pin connectors that the harness is attached to the pump with. You can prove them good. You got to be able to light a headlight. It's got to light a headlight.
Okay, if it doesn't work, what do I do after that, though?
Well, if it doesn't light a headlight, now you can go back and look at the power supply and the source and start working the circuit back. Get a wiring diagram. What applies power to the fuel pump? All right? But you're not going to have that because you said you got power and ground. A headlight kind of makes it foolproof. It either lights it or it doesn't.
Okay.
All right? That's
otherwise,
what you're,
I'm going to have to backtrack. And then if
right.
it's not.
And then we'll talk
if,
next
if that
week.
If doesn't work, the headlight idea doesn't work, then I'm going to have to backtrack to where the power source going
right.
to the pump is.
Correct.
There's a problem somewhere.
And then we can talk next week. All right? That gives you your homework for this week,
all right.
Chris. All right, sir?
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Have a great day.
You're very welcome. You too. Anytime, brother. Hey, coming up next, First Lieutenant Stephen Ananian, 339th Fighter Group, the lads from Falmouth, England. We used to have Uncle Steve on the show all the time Memorial Day weekend. We're bringing him back out of the archives. We've had several requests for him, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we do to hear from Uncle Steve again. Blue skies. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. This is Memorial Day weekend, and in America, we honor what it is and what it's all about. And I appreciate the fact that all of you allow me to step a little bit out of character this time every year as we welcome back Uncle Steve, my uncle. You know, when I first got to know Uncle Steve as a little kid, as silly as this sounds, he was that magical guy that was always mixing eggnog at the last minute on Christmas Eve, and he was always Stephen Ananian, 339th Fighter Group, 8th Air Force, flew his magic. We couldn't figure out how that worked. His thumb could magically come apart, and we always laughed and chuckled. And we were a little scared of Uncle Steve because he was magical like that. I didn't learn until years later that the true magic with Uncle Steve was what he did during the war and some of the conversations I had with him as I grew into a young adult and then an adult. I really came to appreciate what it is he, like so many of his generation and the generations before and after, have done and continue to do to keep us safe. And we thought we would honor him as we do so every year, and welcome him back here to the Car Doctor. Uncle Steve, I love you. It's great to talk to you here today.
I love you too, Kai, and nice to talk to you, you and your listeners again. And I'd like to wish our gratitude to service people that serve our country for us, for our freedom that we enjoy today.
And that's part of what this is about, right, Uncle Steve? I mean,
absolutely.
Memorial Day is not about barbecues and sales at the mall. What's it about to you? What does it mean to you as a veteran of World War II?
Well, we think of what all those people did for us. What they have done for history to free this world that we have the pleasure to live in. It's something that we I have expanded my family. All the veterans of my outfit, we meet annually every year. We've been doing so for 35 years since 1980. I can't believe it's 70 years ago. And I take my time now to explain to people what happened during World War II, because, as I said, it was 70 years ago, and a lot of the younger generation cannot remember or know what happened at that time.
I guess it's hard for them to relate, but yet then we turn around and not to single her out, because, well, we'll have to single her out. Then kids like Katie, my daughter, your niece, your great niece, she volunteers and goes to Afghanistan, and you think that, you know what, maybe the younger generation does get it, like so many of her generation, and she's going to yell at me because I'm singling her out, Uncle Steve, so help me.
No, but you're right, because I was going to mention her, because we just owe her and people like her our gratitude, because we enjoy the freedoms that we have today because of them.
You know, when I was younger and we used to get together at the house in River Edge, I remember you telling us a story or stories where when you were in England, when you were at Falmouth with the 339th, that it got to the point with, as new flyers came in, you almost didn't want to get to know them. And there was a reason for that. Do you remember that story? Do you remember explaining that to me?
No, I don't.
With regard
tell
to,
me about it.
Well, it was, it really stuck with me, even all these years later. Because you said, Ron, we would go through flyers on such a regular basis that it got to the point where the guys living in the tent with us, we didn't want to get to know their name, because if they were gone the next day, it just tore away at you in such a way that, you know, is just one more person gone.
Well, that's true. And, you get to briefing room, and if our commanding officer said, guys, we got a tough mission today. 100 of you guys are going out, and only one is going to come back. I'd look around and everybody say, those poor bastards. I'm sorry for them, but you thought you would live, and that's what kept you going.
Right. And you forget, because I also remember you telling me, because I asked you once, Uncle Steve, how did you do it? How did you march off to war and, you know, not think or think about coming home? And you told me once, Ron, when I got there, I just assumed I was dead and I did what I had to do. And if I got back, I was just one of the lucky ones. And I never forgot that either. You really had a mindset. That whole generation had a mindset, as the mindset of all the generations have come and gone since, that, you know, it really is a dedication to duty for someone to march off to defend the country. And that's really what Memorial Day is all about. It's not about anything else.
I'd like to tell you something. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th. At that time, it was a Sunday. I was a student at NYU. In fact, when I heard about it, I was working out in a gym at NYU, and when I heard the news, I went rushing home to tell my family that what happened, and also to explain to my parents that I was going to go off and join the Army. I was going to become an aviation cadet. And when I got home, we were having, in those days, we used to have early dinner, and lunch. It was Sunday. And so after dinner, I said to my father, I'd like to talk to your dad. And say, well, we used to go in the living room, and he would bring his coffee and his cigarettes, and I would bring my glass of milk into the living room, and I'm preparing to tell him that I'm going to join the aviation cadet. And I was stammering around, and my father turns around and says to me, son, your country needs you. What are you going to do about it? And that was the way it was. And I said, I'm going to join up with the Army Air Corps. And the next day I went to Grand Central Palace in New York on December 8th, and I enlisted in the Army. That was the story.
It kind of clicked in place for you. And they say,
it was something you had to do. In fact, I got to tell you something. I love flying. I mean, when I finished my last mission, I had flown 63 combat missions, and I came home, and my commanding officer said, okay, Steve, this is it. Thank you so much. That's what your last mission. You're going home tomorrow. I said, no, please. I'd like to fly a couple more missions, because the war was ending, and we were shooting down Germans right and left. I mean, this is what I had been fighting for. But he said, no. This is it. If something happened to you, I couldn't face your mother. And that was it.
You know, Uncle Steve, I read, and I've read and reread Ramrod to Munster, your story, and it's out on the internet for anyone that wants to find it. If they Google Ramrod to Munster, it talks about your first combat mission. And in recent years, your wingman that day, when you were shot down and went into the channel, Tom Rich, wrote an addendum. And I giggle, and I'll say it right here on national radio, I giggle every year, every time that I read it, because he talks about you and what it meant to have you as a wingman, but the line that really gets to me is where he said, and I was very blessed to have a wingman like Stephen Ananian, because every time we could see faces, I would look over, and he was sitting very calmly looking around and smiling as if he enjoyed what he was doing. I really think you enjoyed it, Uncle Steve. I think
we all did. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
On D-Day, I wasn't there, but on D-Day, several of our pilots were on leave in London when they heard on the radio that the invasion had started. They all rushed back to our outfit and flew missions on D-Day. We flew three combat missions D-Day.
Just to be there.
And these guys got back and flew at least one mission. And the following 2 days, they flew three missions a day. So
speaking of getting back, Uncle Steve.
Our pilots on D-Day, some of them logged 20 hours of flying time.
And they loved every minute of it.
You know, there's only 24 hours in a day.
Right. Right.
It was something that we were doing that was the world knew. You know, when we went to England, one of the hardest books to get was a German-English dictionary, because the Brits were so certain that the Germans were going to invade England and they would be, occupied.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Uncle Steve, when we come back, we've talked a lot about you flying the plane. I want you to think about the story you told me about when you were shot down over Germany and what transpired that day. We'll have a couple of minutes when we return. Sit tight. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here with Uncle Steve, Lieutenant Stephen Ananian, 339th Fighter Group. We'll both be back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here, as always, on Memorial Day weekend, talking to Uncle Steve, Lieutenant Stephen Ananian. And Uncle Steve, you're still there, sir?
Yes.
So enlighten us, and you have to realize, you know, you've got our interest. We love talking to you here on air every year. There was a particular episode I think is appropriate this time of year, only because Sue, my wife, you know that, and Carolyn, our oldest, had traveled to Germany, and they went to where you were shot down and realized the distance from there to France, and it's not exactly around the corner. Can you tell us about that day when you were shot down?
What was happening, we were escorting the bombers. After we completed escorting the bombers, we flew back and we picked out targets of interest. The weather was overcast, and I was going down through the overcast, and I came out alone over a German tank battle with American tanks. And I went down to strafe the Germans, and I was hit by American tank, friendly fire from the because a P-51 from at high speed looks like an ME-109, and I'm sure if you're in a tank and a plane comes shooting down at you, you're going to shoot back. You're not going to be able to recognize where his friend is.
Well, at least we know.
Long story short.
At least we know it was American marksmanship.
Yeah, of course.
There's the positive, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
What
happened is I got hit, in the carburetor because the engine started to sputter and I was losing altitude. And, of course, the first thing you do, you look for an empty airfield, empty field to make a forced landing. I spotted the field, and as I came into the field to land, I could see the Wehrmacht, the German infantry on the other side of the field, and as soon as the plane came to a halt, I ignited the flare that just burned the plane on fire, and I headed off to the other side of the field where there were woods, and I hid in the shrubs under the trees there, and the Germans came over looking for me, and there was a captain standing about 10 feet away from me. I could see him. I was hiding in the bushes, and he was shouting orders to looking for me, and they never found me. In fact, what happened is I fell asleep. I woke up at night, and I spent 3 days walking back at night until one morning I got up, and I could hear people talking in French. I stood up, and there was a soldier talking to a Frenchman, and I put up my hands and said, "Je suis Americain, je suis Americain." And I was taken to Paris, the headquarters, and interrogated because at that time the Germans were sending in English-speaking Germans dressed as officers, and the job was to assassinate Eisenhower. So.
Wow.
But I got back before they reported me missing.
Yeah, well, thank God for that. Uncle Steve, we love you, and we wish you nothing but best wishes and good health for the coming year and years beyond.
Thank you, and let's thank our servicemen and women who are defending us to this very day, you know.
Absolutely.
And our gratitude goes to those that passed away defending us, the real heroes.
Right, all gave some gave all. Uncle Steve, we look forward to talking to you again next year, if not sooner. You take good care.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. What more can I say, right? It brings a tear in my eye to hear Uncle Steve again and just to hear his message and stories. And, he was a great uncle. He really was. And, one of the heroes, like so many of the veterans and of wars before and after. Always good to talk to Uncle Steve in that sense of the word. Let's close out with this. This comes to us from the folks over at Mitchell One, the Real Fix Sure Track Repair of the Week. An interesting problem. This regards a 2004 Chevy Silverado 2500 HD with a 6-liter in it. And the problem with the vehicle was that the throttle would drop out, the door locks would cycle off and on, and it was really kind of difficult to resolve because it was an intermittent random problem. The story starts out with phantom problems like doors locking and unlocking on their own, and a vehicle can be tough to diagnose. Sure enough, community member Rich's Repair had a Chevrolet Silverado in the shop that could lose power and the door locks would act up after a cold start. They posed the question to the community with the help of fellow members. They were able to resolve it quickly. And what they did was they went through some diagnostics. And this problem occurred after a cold start. And after 1 mile of driving, the door lock started to lock and unlock, and all the dash lights came on, and the throttle went to idle because it went into limping. This will happen on and off for about 3 minutes. The story continues. Sometimes it goes into reduced power. Sometimes it didn't. They went through and checked all the grounds. They looked at wires. They found no brakes. Someone else had put a throttle body in it and a main engine computer, and it made no difference. They hooked the lab scope up. Remember the call we had this hour about the gentleman with the Volkswagen that wouldn't start, about looking for power and ground, positive connection using a headlamp? They hooked the lab scope up. They saw a voltage spike on the PCM ground, ground 103. Added a ground wire, vehicle's fixed. You always got to look at grounds. More information like this at Mitchell1.com. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you once again, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.